Chapter 33. Christine had prepared, filed, and issued the subpoena to Pauline Pepper, Chicago FBI. She was to appear on a gray Thursday morning when court was called to order with a loud rainstorm pattering the 20-foot windows in the ancient courtroom. The place had a musty smell, and Thaddeus realized the radiators had kicked back on. The temperature was down 20 degrees from yesterday, and the jurors were showing up back in their winter wear and scarves. "Not again," he thought, as he stared out at the late, late wintry weather. "Please, let spring and summer get here, and please, let me prove something with this witness that wins this terrible prosecution." What he had to prove, rather, what he could prove through Ancient Pepper, was unclear to him. He had tried the two previous days to speak to her by phone, to get a feel for her testimony, but she had refused to speak with him. Her stock response had been, "This is an ongoing investigation. It is the policy of the United States Department of Justice and the Federal Bureau of Investigation never to discuss ongoing investigations. This includes defense lawyers, Mr. Murphy. Nevertheless, I will appear in court as commanded by the court, and I will bring my investigative file, at least the file cover with the high points. Will that be all, sir?" He was getting the same response every time he called. He even tried calling her supervisor, but that person had mysteriously disappeared from the office, and no one knew when he or she, it was never made known to him, would return. So he was stuck. He had a witness for this morning's opening of the defense case, but he had no clue exactly what she knew, and, moreover, nobody knew exactly what she would reveal, other than what Bruce Blongier had told him, which was that the governor had been recorded discussing payoffs with Mr. Somebody, mob name, some unknown. At 5 of 9, she still wasn't there, and he caught a peek of Judge Prelate looking out the window of his conference room, just off the courtroom. Evidently the judge was going to wait until the last minute, to give Thaddeus as much time as possible to locate and talk to his first witness. Ermaline nudged him.
"I haven't even had a chance to say hello," he smiled at her.
"Sorry for the preoccupation." She told him that was okay, and asked him whether her dress was okay for court. He gave her a once-over and told her she looked fine. Better than fine, great. Thaddeus had told her early that morning about the witness he had subpoenaed, but what he hadn't been able to tell her was what the witness might have to say. "We're both in the dark about that," was the way he had left it with Ermaline. Finally, the judge could wait no longer. At exactly 9 a.m. he glided out wearing his flowing black robe, glasses pushed up on his forehead as he made his way up the several steps to his throne. Quiet settled over the room. Thaddeus looked around. He didn't know what Pauline Pepper looked like, so he didn't know whether she was in the courtroom or not.
"Counsel, ready to proceed?"
"Ready, Your Honor."
"Ready, Your Honor," said Thaddeus.
"Counsel," indicating Thaddeus, "you may call your first witness."
Thaddeus rose to his feet. Might as well play this for all it was worth. "Defense calls Special Agent Pauline Pepper." The bailiff, whose job it was to locate witnesses and seat them in the witness chair, looked around the courtroom. Seeing no one coming forth in response to the witness call, the bailiff hurried back up the long aisle to the double doors. Thaddeus could then hear him outside in the lobby looking for the witness by name. Sure enough, the bailiff soon returned with the witness close behind. He showed her where to stand, to be sworn, although the witness was obviously an old pro and automatically raised her hand before the clerk of court. She took the oath and settled comfortably into the witness chair. Thaddeus sized her up, along with the jury. She was a pleasant enough-looking woman, dark hair, very little makeup, no jewelry, with nice sorority girl features, unsmiling, and clutching a blue file folder that appeared to be maybe a half-inch thick. She stared at Thaddeus, awaiting his first question. At just that instant, just as Thaddeus was about to pose his first question to the witness, SAAG Barr spoke up.
"Your Honor, the state objects to this witness. The state claims surprise."
Judge Prelate turned to the jury.
"Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to ask the bailiff to return you to the jury room. We have a matter that needs to be taken up on the record in open court. As I've told you previously, there will be times when you'll be excused from what's being said in here. This is one of those times. Bailiff, please take the jury to the jury room."
Long pause while the jury filed out. Murmurs and complaints and sighs could be heard from them as they went out the side door. Soon they had evacuated, and the judge turned his attention to SAAG Barr.
"Please put your objection on the record, counsel." "Surprise, Your Honor.
Pauline Pepper isn't listed in the defendant's written disclosure, at least not until just before we started this morning when counsel handed me his amended response to disclosure. I haven't known about this witness until that happened, 10 minutes ago.
Counsel?
The judge said to Thaddeus. Thaddeus slowly drew to his feet.
Your Honor, I didn't know about this witness myself, not until yesterday. It would have been impossible for me to list her any earlier.
Not true, Judge, Barr said, jumping to her feet. Counsel has my number and knows where to find me in my office. He could have alerted me yesterday when he learned about this new witness.
As they argued, the witness was still in the witness chair, slowly thumbing through the blue file folder, ignoring the proceedings. She had been around long enough that she had seen and heard everything. She even looked a trifle bored.
Your Honor, Thaddeus said, this witness has refused to discuss her testimony with me. I had nothing to tell counsel about the witness. She has claimed confidentiality and secrecy imposed by the DOJ until I asked her questions this morning. I don't even know if she is a witness.
Judge Prelate frowned down at Thaddeus.
That's pretty chancy, isn't it, Mr. Murphy? Calling a witness whose testimony you're unsure about? Don't all the trial manuals say you should never take that chance?
Thaddeus was exasperated. He had been feeling exactly the same way, but he couldn't come right out and say the truth, that he had no case anyway, that he was really on a fishing expedition this morning.
Your Honor, whether I told counsel about this witness yesterday or today wouldn't have made any difference. I had nothing else to tell her but the name of the witness. That's all I know.
But you could have let Miss Barr do some digging on her own by letting her know yesterday, the judge said. I'm not sure I'm going to allow this at all.
It shouldn't be allowed, said S.A.E.G. Barr, with a hurt tone. She took her seat, not wishing to appear too pushy. Instead, she looked hurt, almost pouting, as if Thaddeus had hurt her personally.
So, what I'm going to do, Miss Barr, I'm going to give you 15 minutes alone with the witness, in your library office. You can have the same time Thaddeus had to prepare for this witness. Maybe she'll talk to you, maybe she won't, I don't know, but you do deserve 15 minutes with her. We'll stand in recess until 9:25, and then I want everyone back in here. Agent Pepper, do you understand?
Agent Pepper looked up from her review of the file.
I'll be here at 9:25, Your Honor. Very well. The court stands in recess.
At 9:25, everyone, including the jury, had returned and been seated. Thaddeus watched the special agent as she took her seat. Her blank look gave no indication what, if anything, she had discussed with the Attorney General's representative. It would be very unusual for one law enforcement officer not to discuss a pending case with another law enforcement officer, so Thaddeus didn't have the highest hopes for how this was going to go, now that the witness had been sandpapered by the SAAG. Nevertheless, he had no choice but to plunge ahead. Thaddeus continued with his case in chief.
State your name.
Special Agent Pauline Pepper.
What is your business, occupation, or profession?
Special Agent, Federal Bureau of Investigation.
How long have you had that job?
She tilted her eyes to the ceiling.
Oh, let's see. As of yesterday, 12 years. It was my anniversary hire date yesterday.
Well, congratulations, Thaddeus smiled.
She returned the smile, not exactly a warm smile, more in the line of a business-person-to-business-person smile of acknowledgement, a smile that said, thank you, but we're really colleagues here, not friends. Thaddeus got the message. She was cool, and she was definitely not his friend. He figured she was probably not anyone's friend, since the state hadn't called her in its case.
And what is your rank?
GS 1811, General Investigation Series.
Which means what?
I can carry a firearm and investigate crimes. I cannot make arrests.
Where are you based out of?
Primary field office is Chicago, Illinois. My address is the Dirksen Building.
What is your educational background?
College, University of Florida, master's degree, forensic accounting.
Have you done any forensic accounting in this case?
As a matter of fact, I have.
Thaddeus felt his heart flip over.
Finally, was he onto something here? Would it help him or hurt him? He wanted to tell Ermeline to hang onto her seat, that her future was just now coming into view. Maybe, maybe not.
What accounting records have you looked at?
I should rephrase that. I haven't done any forensic accounting specifically related to this case, no, nor have I been asked to do that, but I have reviewed the books and records of one Victor Harrow, whom I believe your client is charged with murdering.
And who asked you to review Victor Harrow's records?
No one.
Why did you review those records?
I had a suspicion of what I might find there, based on a conversation I had.
Who did you have a conversation with?
Attorney Fletcher T. Franey.
And what did Attorney Franey say to you?
Objection!
SAEG Barr was quickly on her feet.
Calls for hearsay.
Business record rule exemption, Your Honor. Thaddeus shot back. Besides, the statement is not being offered for the truth of the matter asserted, only that it was said.
This is preliminary, said Judge Prelate with a nod at the witness. I'm going to allow it. Please proceed.
I'll repeat the question. What did Attorney Franey say to you?
That he had a telephone conference with the Attorney General of Illinois.
What was said?
Same objection.
Overruled. Proceed, please. Objection is noted on the record.
Franey played a recording for me. The Attorney General is asking him to look into items of property owned by Victor Harrow. Anything else?
Yes. The AG, Attorney General, instructed Franey to obtain Vic Harrow's federal income tax returns.
Anything about that of suspicion to you?
Well, Attorney Franey wasn't Vic Harrow's power of attorney for income tax purposes, so it would have been illegal for him to have obtained Victor Harrow's federal income tax returns.
The hair prickled on Thaddeus's neck. Finally, a light, a curtain parted, a glimmer of hope. Let me be sure I understand this. You're saying the Attorney General of Illinois asked Attorney Fletcher T. Franey to commit an illegal act?
That's what the tape recording says. I have a transcript of that conversation, she said,
and removed four sheets from her file folder. She held them up, and Thaddeus quickly stood, asked permission of the court to approach and retrieve the papers. He scanned them quickly. Your Honor, I would submit these four sheets as Defendant's Exhibit 1. The judge looked at the witness.
I trust these are copies. You have others?
Of course.
Very well. Any objection, counsel?
Yes, Your Honor, said SAEG Barr. First of all, it's hearsay. Second of all, it's surprise. When I had my 15 minutes with this witness, she said nothing about this supposed recorded statement. Third, it's immaterial, as it doesn't make any fact in this case more or less likely.
Is that all?
SAEG Barr nodded.
That's all for right now, but I would like to file a written brief on this issue before Defendant's Exhibit 1 is passed to the jury. I don't think so, said the judge. Mr. Murphy, please pass Defendant's Exhibit 1 to the jury and continue with your questions if there's more.
Thaddeus thanked the judge and continued. So you say that as a result of the conversation reflected in Defendant's Exhibit 1 and as a result of your conversation with Mr. Franey, you reviewed books and records of Victor Harrow? She nodded.
I did. Special Agent Giovanni and I went to Mr. Harrow's mobile office. We were graciously allowed by Bruce Blongier access to any records we requested.
What records did you request?
I reviewed the general ledger. Agent Giovanni reviewed bank statements.
And what did you discover, if anything, in the general ledger?
Objection,
said SAEG Barr, again jumping to her feet.
These records are hearsay.
No, Your Honor, Thaddeus disagreed. Business records exemption. I can lay the foundation.
I think there's enough foundation. Objection overruled. Please proceed with your answer, Agent Pepper.
Thank you. You asked what I discovered in the general ledger. I found a dozen or more instances in this current year where Victor Harrow was making transfers of large amounts of cash to an account he kept in the Cayman Islands.
Where did the money go from there?
First National Bank of the Americas, Chicago.
And what happened to the money there?
It was withdrawn from the bank by two well-known organized crime figures, Ricardo Montanari and Johnny Bladani.
Do you know where the money went from there?
We do.
Where would that be?
To the governor himself.
A group gasp went up from the jury. Judge Prelate pushed his glasses up on his forehead and blinked several times. The bailiff sat up and opened his eyes. The clerk of court looked up from her screen and smiled at the people filling the courtroom. General murmurs were heard making their way among the spectators. Thaddeus paused and appeared to be examining his notes. Truth was, he was letting the damning testimony sink in. He had just created reasonable doubt, and he knew it.
Hold it, he slowly began. How do you know Victor Harrow's money made its way from what you have characterized as well-known mob figures to the governor of Illinois?
She patted her blue folder.
I have excerpts of other conversations. The governor and attorney general talking. The governor and Ricardo Montanari talking. Money being exchanged. Names being tossed around, especially Victor Harrow's name.
Why Victor Harrow's name?
Because Victor stopped paying off 6 months before his homicide, and the governor and the AG were, shall we say, very upset.
Did they want him dead?
They wanted him made an example of. That's as close to dead as we get.
Please hand those documents to the clerk. I'm going to ask her to mark those as defendant's exhibits consecutively by conversation, date, and time.
The clerk nodded. She understood, and she would see to it.
Thaddeus told the court that was all the questions he had. He figured it best to quit while he was ahead. The trial manuals did say that. He didn't want to push it and suddenly get an answer that convicted his client of something else.
"Your witness, counsel," the judge said to Barr. "You may cross-examine."
Barr rose to her feet.
"Now let me shift gears a bit. Do you know anything about the arrest of my client, Ermeline Ransom?"
"Vaguely."
"From your investigation, do you know anything about the gun and knife found at her residence?"
"Nothing."
"So, Ermeline could have shot Victor Harrow, and you wouldn't know anything about that, correct?"
"Correct."
"And in none of your recordings have you heard anything about the shooting, correct?"
"Correct."
"You're not here to tell the jury she's innocent, are you?"
"Absolutely not. I have no idea about that."
At that moment, Thaddeus could feel his defense slipping away. Ermeline was starting to sound guilty again, and he was sure the jury was having the same response to the line of questioning.
"Do you know anything about her fingerprints on the gun?"
"I do not."
"You don't know when she handled the gun, do you?"
"No."
"She could have handled the gun when she shot Victor Harrow, for all you know, correct?"
"Correct."
"And in none of your recordings is there anything about fingerprints on the gun, correct?"
"Correct.
I know nothing about the fingerprints." "And with the knife, she could have used the knife to carve ERM in Victor's forehead, and you wouldn't know anything about that, correct?"
"That's correct."
"You're not telling the jury you have any evidence that she didn't carve him up, are you?"
"I am not. I wouldn't know that."
"That is all."
Thaddeus had his chance to redirect, but it was flat and simply repeated what he had gone over before. At the end, he felt like Ermeline's defense had slipped away. All they had proven was that the governor and AG had talked and that Victor had to be an example. That wasn't the same as proof that they had done it. He had been warned by Quentin Irwin Jr. You must prove her innocence beyond a reasonable doubt. That's the reality of what you're up against. As it stood, when S.A. Pauline Pepper was excused from the courtroom, the Illinois governor, like governors before him, was guilty of something. But as of yet, nobody even knew that for sure. Thaddeus then asked the court for a conference in chambers. The judge agreed, and a procession followed him from the courtroom into his conference room. The participants included Thaddeus, S.A.A.G. Barr, the clerk of court reporter, and Ermeline. Her deputy waited just outside the glass door. Judge Prelate disappeared into his connecting office and emerged minutes later without his robe. He was dunking a tea bag into a white mug.
"Sorry,"
he shrugged.
"Only have one cup."
Everyone nodded. Nobody wanted anything else.
"All right,"
said Judge Prelate, taking his place at the head of the long conference table.
"Back on the record, what did you have to offer, Mr. Murphy?"
"Judge, I would next like to play for the jury a video I obtained from Ermeline's ex-husband. His name is Hector Ransom."
"I know Hector,"
said the judge. It was a small town. Everyone knew everyone.
"Right. Well, my paralegal and I went to Chicago the day you let us off at 3. We located Hector and took his statement. I would like to play that statement for the jury."
Judge Prelate smiled.
"I'm sure the Special Assistant Attorney General has something to say about that, madam."
S.A.A.G. Barr smiled for the first time, now that the jury couldn't see.
"Hearsay. It gives me no chance to cross-examine the witness. Totally object. I would like a copy, though, as this also is new, just like the rest of Mr. Murphy's case." "The court will have to sustain that objection. Mr. Murphy, the statement is hearsay, pure and simple, and the state has to be given the opportunity to cross-examine the witness. Couldn't you have asked him to come here and given an evidentiary statement, or noticed it for his residence or place of work in Chicago?"
"Not really. He's very nomadic, Judge."
"You mean he's a ghost?"
"Exactly, Your Honor. He's here one day and gone the next."
"Do you know where he is now?"
"No. He didn't want the SAAG getting into his witness and sandpapering him. He had to get there first, before Miss Barr."
"Well, that should conclude this hearing. Let the record show this evidentiary conference took place in my conference room, out of the hearing of the jury. Anything else, counsel?"
No one had anything else, and Thaddeus left the room.